Hey, Shane.
What's up, Tony?
Hey, and Craig is here. You know what? We'll explain why we're doing this fun special mini episode here in a minute. But like, I really think that Bijan should have an NIL deal with Dynasty Fantasy.
Does that include everybody putting their lips around his wiener?
Yes, because like, he is making people so much money right now in content generation. It's nuts.
I think we're past the point of that, though. Like, I think the Bijan hype train has been around for, 2 years now? I mean, I think it predates my involvement with fantasy, where now we're, like, starting to, like, okay, we're at fatigue point, so let's talk about someone else, but we're going to circle back as soon as the combine happens, and then when he goes, like, whatever round he goes in, everybody thinks first. I think it's going to be second, because the RBs.
Yeah. I mean, what's stopping the Eagles from signing Saquon?
I think that's the big issue this year, is everybody's forgetting how deep this free agency class is.
Yep. So we're here. This is going to be episode 69.5. So we're not really going to do a dude. And so Ryan is out this week on a car accident. That's what he's on the injured list for. And I obviously don't mean to make that sound so light, but like, it's something that I've known about since Thursday, so it's kind of gone from like the most horrifying, awful shit ever. Ryan was in a car accident. He's fine. He broke his arm. He's apparently, orthopedic surgeons don't work on Fridays. So he's
USA,
right? The only people that get 4-day work weeks are the ones that you might actually need on a Friday. So Ryan is on the injured list for the weekend until he can talk to an orthopedic surgeon about what he needs and hopefully get like the good drugs. That for me, you ever gotten the good drugs before, Shane? Like the hospital painkiller drugs?
No, I've only been to the hospital once in my adult life. I'm scared of the medical system. I don't want a bill. It's very unhealthy of like, hey, I was telling my mom about this yesterday. We are such a family of, I will go after we're past the point of no return. Because I'm like, okay, now it's kind of serious, as opposed to like, eh, it'll go away, right?
Right. And like, Ryan, he texted me at like 11 o'clock at night on Thursday night. I was like, I just got out of the ER. I was in an accident. Car's totaled. And I'm like, what do you need? How can I help you? Whatever. So he calls me. And of course, he's doped out of his mind. And he's like, yeah, you know, I went into the ambulance and they blah, blah, blah. And I was like, must be nice, bro. Must be nice. Like that's the most expensive Uber on the fucking planet.
Yeah, it's living large.
So Ryan will hopefully be back, if not next week, in a couple weeks. This is going to give him plenty of time to catch up to where Shane and I are at when it comes time to looking at this upcoming rookie class. But before we do, I want to ask you, Shane, who wins the Super Bowl?
This is an auditory format, but I'm wearing my AJ Brown shirt.
I'm saving it for the game.
I'm going to do laundry today so I can wear it again tomorrow.
My man.
But yeah, I'm an AFC West guy and I'm tired of the Chiefs, and I have seen enough hate on the Eagles. I've seen enough hate on Jalen Hurts, AJ Brown, Devonta Smith. Shit. So I wanted to bring it home and make everybody mad.
So I'm in a weird spot because my heart screams Philly and my brain says this has all the makings of a Kansas City upset.
They're just too good, dude. Like, this is me being Marvel brain of the good guy's going to win in my mind, right? Of like, I'm going to will it into existence. But yeah, Casey's just like, they're just riddled with injury and they're just blowing over people, right? Like,
it almost doesn't matter. I think we've also seen the Eagles run roughshod over an absolutely god awful NFC.
Oh yeah.
Like, the NFC is the NBA's, you know, East. And it's just you pop out and you look good because you're beating the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at like the Chiefs, right? Everybody assumed that the AFC West was going to be a bloodbath, but it was really only one team, right? Like, I'm a Chargers fan, but we were a fucking joke this year. Like the Raiders. Happened?
Well, I mean, you watched every play. Like, what happened? Because it's last year they had injuries and were still incredibly close to being a really tough out in the playoffs.
I think they just kind of rolled over and died, honestly. I think Herbert not actually being like full strength, like because he had torn rib cartilage, he had a torn labrum, I believe what he had, or some labrum injury. So like you could see it in the last game when his arm was taped up. But I think Joe Lombardi just kind of gave up. He's like, we got three weapons. Keenan Allen's out. What the fuck do we do? Well, sure. All right, we'll just give it to Eckler. We'll do a curl. We'll do a screen. Oh, shit, we're losing. We're going to bomb it to Mike Williams if he's good.
Right.
I don't know, dude. It's I don't know how this team hasn't killed my dad, because I've only been watching for 2 years and I'm like, this shit sucks, dude. I mean, I'm sure you've experienced that too with the Bears, but
The good thing about being a Bears fan is that they've always been so bad that there's no disappointment anymore.
Yeah.
And like, I've had my heart broken a couple times, but it never really felt like the Bears were a team that had a chance in 06, 05, 06. That defense was incredible, but you just knew when they went up against Peyton Manning, it's like, well, the Bears only play one style of defense. So who's the quarterback that you don't want to see? It's the guy that knows what that defense looks like and where to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was peak. Like you said, you know, you've become a football fan. It wasn't like a lifelong process, which in a way is like something I'm envious of, but like, that era, Peyton Manning was one of the most insufferable players to watch because he'd call like six plays in the huddle.
Mm.
And then you'd come and line up and he would just call a brand new play.
Yeah.
And so there was always like, you know, 1 second left in the play clock because he'd just like point and be like, all right, Reggie Wayne's doing this. All right, Anthony Gonzalez is doing this. All right, Dallas Goedert, you're going to do this. Joseph Addai's doing this. And you're like watching like, come on, dude. Come on, dude.
Why do you think his forehead's so big, dude? It's all those plays you had to remember. He just kept creeping back.
It was one of the craziest things to watch because it was like watching a coach play quarterback.
Yeah.
And so it was just a shit show nightmare. But that was the only time that I expected the Bears to have a chance. And like I look at the Chargers and it makes me think about another Bears thing. I was playing Madden the other day. And 23, so I tried to use the Chicago Bears Matt Eberflus playbook.
Mm.
And dude, it is the same offensive playbook that Madden has assigned to the Chicago Bears since Dick Geron was the quarterback or the coach in 1999. And so like there's been Lovie Smith, there's been Matt Nagy, there's been Mark Trestman, there's been a series of different offensive schemes, but the Bears just run the quotes Bears playbook. And so when I watch the Chargers offense, I'm like, do they do anything other than these same five things?
No, I actually wrote, I don't remember who I wrote about on somebody, but I was like, this player would have been the perfect wide receiver too in the Chargers offense in 2022 because they ran curl, they ran screen, and they blocked. And that was it. That's all they did. I think we also were like super ravaged at depth because like, okay, we have like our top five guys, but after that, like we had DeAndre Carter, right? Like no shame to that guy. He did the best that he could given the circumstance. But like if that's our number three, like what do we got here?
Josh Palmer was a bad pick.
Yeah, and you know what sucks is he's a Tennessee guy. I was learning after I watched the Tillman tape, and we're gonna draft Tillman. I'm gonna be so mad.
Right. I haven't gotten to receivers yet, but like everything I read about Tennessee's offense was that Tillman had, so it went from Palmer to Tillman to what's his name? Who's the other receiver?
My guy, Jalin Hyatt.
Okay. And they've all done the same thing. They've all run that same role. Yeah. And, you know, Palmer did okay with it. And then Tillman did okay with it. And then Hyatt's just like, I can just do this.
He won the Blitnikoff this year. That's right. That's how, I mean, he's also runs like a 4.3. So he's lightning on the field, but we'll talk about him later date. But yeah, he jumped out on the screen to me of like, you know what? Some people have this guy as wide receiver six. He's up there with me. So
he jumped out at me when I was watching Hendon Hooker, right?
Yep, that's how I found him too.
And there are so many plays that Hendon Hooker made that I'm like, yo, if he's throwing to anybody else, that's not a touchdown or that's not a completion. And I was fucking blown away. I thought it was kind of like watching Pickett 2 years ago or last year and seeing Jordan Addison.
Yeah. And I think that's like, that's the thing of the talent analysis of who elevates who, right? Where you can have a really good wide receiver elevate a mid-tier quarterback, Kenny Pickett. Or it's the inverse, right? Where you have like CJ Stroud bumping all these NFL caliber people up. So you never know if it's chicken or the egg, but that is part of the process of, as we've gone along, of learning who affects who here, right?
Right. When I'm watching quarterbacks, I'm like, does a better ball lead to more yardage on this play? Mm-hmm. Does a better read lead to a bigger play? Like, because in the NFL, you get those windows so rarely.
Yeah.
You know, every time you'll read like fantasy stuff during the season, I do it a lot for DFS. It's like, oh man, like quarterback X, let's say Tua missed Tyreek Hill, who was 5 yards behind the defense, and it would have been an 80-yard touchdown. You see that like once a week because it only happens that rarely.
Yeah. Cause these guys are professionals. They are the 1% of the 1%ers, right?
Right. Dudes don't run open in the NFL very often.
Yeah, they're not. There's not Tanner McGee in every team,
right? And that's like when I watch running backs, and I think we've fully transitioned into scouting stuff. When I watch running backs, honestly, man, for the most part, I'm just watching the line, and I'm trying to see where the hole is, how big the hole is, and did the running back hit the hole, the right one?
Yeah,
and because you can look awesome if no one's touching you for 25 yards.
I think that's why Gibbs is like kind of controversial to people, because there are moments where the hole is 5 miles wide, and there's sometimes where he takes 3 inches and he jukes three guys, right? So it's like that intermittent of like, how good is this? I know that was like the big knock on Blake Corum being a product of the Michigan system before he came out, is because that O-line's just like top five in the nation, and they just create massive gaps where the dude can just plow through.
You know what though? There were a lot of people last year that said similar stuff about Kenneth Walker, because he was getting gigantic gaps to run through. Yeah. And it's not that. It's okay, so where is he going when he gets to that second level? Where is he looking to go? Is he going inside? Is he going outside? Does he have a bag of tricks? Does he have moves? Does he have, if you're one-on-one with a guy, are you trying to juke him? Are you running through him? Are you hitting him with a spin? Like what?
Yeah.
And then how does this translate to the NFL? Because I'm going to tell you what, man, you don't get 15-yard open blocked running lanes in the league. It doesn't happen like that.
No, and that's even pro says. Like, I think I was watching a Derrick Henry thing, one of the podcast clips on my shorts on YouTube. And he was like, yeah, the NFL's different. Like, it's at a different level. You have half a millisecond compared to what you had in college. And that's coming from a freak of nature, just plows through grown-ass men, right?
Right. So let's talk about these quarterbacks. All right. So in the super group of guys that we've got, I would say, how are you feeling about Tanner McKee? You like Tanner McKee?
Dude, I made this comparison. He's like a baby giraffe. He's one of those guys who is too big for his brain. He doesn't understand how truly large of a human being he is. He looks incredibly awkward. And it sucks because as a 22-year-old, like, you're not fully developed into your body yet, but yet this is the peak point of your career where you need to be in tune with your frame, right? So someone will take him in like the sixth as a project, right? I don't know. I saw someone somewhere said he was QB2, and I was like, dude, I'm not good at fantasy, but holy shit.
It's takes. We are in takes season, man. It's content farming, and it's funny because I've always kind of, as someone that makes, you know, hashtag content, I like to feel like it's different because I, you know, me and Ryan and you, we're doing it for us. There's no intended audience here.
Yeah. And I was explaining to my dad yesterday at lunch. He's like, do you make money off of this? I was like, we'll do ads for anybody. We don't care. But at the moment, this is just, we're just trying to get better at the process. And if people benefit from it, like, hell yeah.
Right. We're not like underwritten by Underdog Fantasy or BlackRock. And like, you know, cool. Like, for the people that do that, hey man, that shit rules. I'm sick of getting up at 4:30 in the morning. I would love to do this and have a brand and do whatever. But like, I do it because I like it. It is fun. And so how are you enjoying the dive into the process of like looking at rookies and figuring out what it is that you look for in a guy. How's like the, let's get meta with it. How has the process of the process been for you?
I honestly love it. I feel like I'm an entirely different fantasy player now. Like this is me as a person trying to always grow. And this is one of those instances of me spinning the personality wheel, landing on fantasy football and being like, all right, how deep does this rabbit hole go?
Oh, it's deep.
And I feel like I can actually watch football now. Cause like I'm a red zone guy, right? I know we talked about that the last couple of times I was on, where now I can sit down and actually analyze, like, granted it's a cut up feed of 9 minutes of some dude blocking, getting tackled for a loss, having a big run, right? It's a super sped up, not a highlight reel, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I actually have an eye for it now, which is, it makes me appreciate where I am now compared to where I was. Like I've won a couple titles in the 2 years I've played. I can compete with the bigger people, but I've always felt like not outmatched, but I never had like the eye for it, right? Where I'm just like, okay, this is what the people that I like say, this is what the data says, but now I can actually plant my flag and be like, hey, this is what it is, right? This is what I see. And I'll be wrong, right? If I'm wrong on a guy, like, more power to everybody being, hey, you were dumb about it, and then I can get better. Like, that's the whole point of this process, right?
Yeah. It changes the way you watch the game too. You know?
Yeah.
Like when the games start this year, even in red zone, you're gonna be like, oh, well, you know, this guy's, they're playing off here. Why isn't he looking for, where is he finding the zone? All that kind of stuff. I don't know. It changes you in a small way in how you watch it. And really for me, it just means all I watch is like the offensive line now, you know? And
well, that's like the good tapes on YouTube is
blank
O-line / offense against this, as opposed to player X versus defense X. Right.
Right.
And for me too, I think this always happens in my life. I always do the hardest thing first by accident, where I did quarterbacks first and I was like, dude, I have zero clue what I'm looking for here. So I had to watch like an extensive amount of tape on guys that did not matter. Like, I think I watched like 9 games on Tanner McGee. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like just out of the process to get to where I needed to be. Also, shout out Tanner McGee. He grew up in my hometown and he went to our quote unquote rival high school, Centennial. Okay. And I say rival because we beat them like one time in 2007 and they became like number 2 high school football team in the nation for like 6 years. So,
oh shit.
Small world. So I hope he gets paid. You know what I mean? I know I goof on him, but dude, if you can get $5 million to sit on the bench, like, more power to you in life, dude.
Taylor Heinicke. The Taylor Heinicke retirement plan.
That's my guy forever.
Yeah, he's perfect. He's just a harmless, you know, goofy bro that has like cult hero status in Washington and is not really that good.
Yep.
Every team's got one, man. That's like the bench player.
That's what I strive to be, baby.
Yeah, you want to be the role player, man. Okay, so, you know, it's... So I was talking to someone about quarterbacks, super flex quarterback ranks. And I thought it was a lock that if, you know, Bryce Young went to Houston, that he was the 102 in rookie drafts. But now I'm hearing if the Colts move up and take Stroud... Or if the Colts move up and take Levis.
Well, we know how we feel on Levis. So
right.
we'll save it for a later date, but yeah,
good God.
Fade for us. That's the short of it. I think it's very tricky because I think you and I are very in on Houston. I know it's a shit franchise, but they have enough draft capital and they're kind of changing the culture down there where it's not a nuclear waste site to avoid, right? Where it's like, man, it depends who's going to go there, right? But
sure.
For me, I think we won't see the Lions draft a quarterback unless it's like second round. And they're like, well, we got another one, so we might as well have a project player just in case. But I think Seattle's who I really want to see someone go to because their O-line's really good. They have a great defense. They have good receivers. They have Kenneth Walker, right? That quarterback is set up to be successful, where I'm a little apprehensive of the teams that might trade up, right? I don't know if Indy does trade up though, because like, okay, so Chicago trades back, right? They trade to like Carolina or the Raiders, right? That's like my assumption of what's going to happen. Number two is Houston. They're going to get QB2, which probably will be my, it might be their guy. You never know, right? Some, I, like, I think the Will Levis is a psyop created by the NFL coaches to just make Indy do something really fucking stupid right now. Three is Arizona. They might trade out. They might take a Will Anderson type. And then four is Indy, right? So they might get lucky and just hit their spot. I we're going to see. We have, what, 2 months to figure out and talk all this shit. But yeah, I'm not avoiding Houston.
I wouldn't be either. Is Young your quarterback one in this class?
He is. No, CJ Stroud. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
That was the thing. I've been so entrenched in the Stroud hype where I just hear a name and I'm like, yes, that's my guy. But
I am.
It's close. It is very close, though.
I went into it expecting there to be a significant margin between Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, and there just wasn't. They're a lot closer than I think people think they are, in different ways.
Yes, I think if you can combine the two of them and their skill set, they would be the perfect quarterback. Because what you see with Bryce Young is he is an innovator. He is someone who can see the whole field and make things happen. Where CJ Stroud, from what I saw, is he can do that, but it's not like his number one skill, right? Is he can throw the ball really well. He can navigate the field, but he's a very system style guy. Where Bryce Young is, he has that Mahomes edge where, like, he can make something out of nothing. I think that's an intangible talent, and I think that's why he is elevated to where he is. And that's the number one thing I saw on his tape of the dude gets LOL. He's small all the time, but, like, he's amazing with the ball in his hands.
Yeah. He does that thing where he's a mobile quarterback and he's running towards the line of scrimmage, but he's continuing to keep his eyes downfield and forcing linebackers and DBs into committing to one or the other.
Yep.
And that is the most unstoppable position in football for a mobile quarterback, because there's no wrong answer unless you read the defender wrong.
Yeah.
And so that's a play that's going to have a ton of success. And I see Bryce Young do that in a way that seems just completely natural.
Oh yeah, it's totally intuitive. The only thing I'm worried about him is like a quote unquote mobile quarterback. I don't think he's going to actually use his legs like we think he is. I think he'll use it like Russ, right? I know that's the big comp, sure. But when he goes down head first, and that scares the shit out of me. Like I am terrified of, like, hey man, I know Mac Jones gets clowned on for putting his foot up, but like you got to protect yourself. Like these dudes are coming out here to kill you. Like yeah. you don't go head first. Someone will fall on your head.
Those are things that like we watch. And you know that people that get paid infinitely more to do this know, like, they see that and they're like, you got to learn how to fall, bro. So
yeah,
it seems like I would hope that if you are a professional quarterback prospect with the potential of being the first overall pick, you are coachable. And I believe that that would be something that they could iron out.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's the bright side of the top. At least for the top two big dudes, is they are coachable. They seem like they have the skill set, but they do also seem malleable. I mean, look at Stroud, right? He was he's okay, and then like the playoff game happens, and everyone's like, holy shit! Like this dude has untapped potential, and I think someone can bring that out of him.
Right. I also think, you know, you and I kind of talked about this, that we have this theory because the same thing happened with Justin Fields, is he didn't start running until the national championship. And I think there's a chance that there's like a discouragement towards running from coaching.
Yeah.
So.
Well, everybody's scared of RG3, right? Everybody is terrified that they're going to be the Washington football team or the Commanders or whatever. But not every organization has run that poorly. You know what I mean? Some teams will be like, hey, you can sit down. It's okay. Or someone like Lamar, I'm just not going to play. Sorry. Yeah. I'm not feeling good. I got a PCL strain. It ain't worth it to me. There'll be more games. Whatever.
Right. We're not winning the Super Bowl this year. It's fine.
Yeah. Let it go.
Yeah.
So Justin Fields was like, that was when I started watching football. I watched the draft. I watched a couple of playoffs games before that. But like, I think you mentioned it in one of the podcasts earlier, but he was not known as like a mobile quarterback before. No, he was more
pocket passer.
Yeah. Which is insane because he only threw for what, 3,000 yards this year and he tore up it on the field. So it's like, that's where Stroud is for me. It's like, we saw in the Georgia game, he can use his legs. It's not his number one asset, but he can do it both or do both.
there was, I would argue that of the big three, CJ Stroud, in fact, I would say of all the quarterbacks, CJ Stroud has the best accuracy of all of them. And
he's got the safest, he's got the safest floor in my eyes.
Is there a landing spot that makes you reconsider him as QB one? If Jeff Saturday goes to Indy and they trade up?
Honestly, dude, Indy is like where I'm out. Like I think I don't know what they're doing with Indy. We talked about in the Discord, but like they're gonna do one or two. They're not gonna do both. They're gonna either trade up and not have Jeff Saturday the quarterback, and they're, cause they're gonna give up assets, right? You're gonna Andrew Luck yourself, or you're gonna give up all these picks. I mean, they didn't give up anything but for Andrew Luck, but they're gonna set up the foundation where he's not gonna be in a successful environment, and you're gonna have a bad coach. So I think you can only pick one. Either, if they do one, I think I'm a little bit more leaning on it, but if they do both, I'm fucking out, dude. I don't care who lands there. I'll trade out of the pick. I don't want to touch that place, and I'll be wrong. I don't care about being wrong, but like it, sure. that's such a scary circumstance to me of like, we've seen how close it is to ruin prospects. Look at Trevor Lawrence, right?
Yeah.
Almost ruined a generational prospect.
Yep. And let's skip over to the generational prospect. So you've done more. I haven't touched wide receivers yet, and you're working on running backs right now.
I have done four running backs. The plan
today. Who are they? I want to know.
I've done Bijan, Gibbs, Charbonnet, and Evans. So I kind of did it the inverse way because I initially was going, like, I just picked a dude initially on quarterback. I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this guy. I think I watched Hendon Hooker first. Okay. I was like, hey, whatever. He's non-consequential to the draft. This is kind of a good foundation to start of.
Sure.
This isn't going to ruin my process. And then I worked down the list that you have, which is 15 guys. So I like ended up watching dudes who were like future salesmen. Yep. And then wide receiver, I did the same thing too. But with running back, I started at the top because I was like, okay, well, Tony recommended you should look at like the crown jewel and then compare everybody else to that. Yeah, so I've done Bijan, Gibbs, Charbonnet, and Evans. And I'm trying to do Tucker and Tank and everybody within the next couple days.
Are you, so you're a huge Sharps guy?
I love Charbonnet. The dude is a bowling ball, and for as much shit as everybody wants to be like, Bijan is a three down running back, he can do it all, I understand that. I get the hype. I'm not gonna sit here and tell people Bijan is not the number one, right? Like, that's just a stupid prospect, right? Like,
in bad take.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get if it's super flex, whatever. Like, depending on your team structure, like, there's all caveats. But, like, Charbonnet is built for three downs. And as the way the NFL is leading is it's going to committee. Where this guy, I know he was in college for 4 years. One of them was he was out for an injury. But he is built to last, right? He's built for tough. And yeah. I think that is an asset that people are going to sleep on, where – a lot of the dudes are going to the NFL are smaller, right? And like, it's nice to see that we have a variability in player style, but at the running back position, you want someone who is a fat boy. You want someone who can take a beating and stay on the field. And he's not a great pass catcher. He can do it, right? He has one move. It's one lateral sidestep, and then he just goes straight. Yeah. So his athleticism isn't insane, but I think he has the overall, like, quote unquote, prototypical style that teams are going to lean into. Cause I know you're a big proponent of the NFL leading, going more towards a running style in the coming years of, because defenses have figured out how to break the passing game.
Right.
So I think him as a player is going to be a big, he might be like sleeper. You know what I mean? He might have like mid rounds, depending where he goes. Right.
Sure.
We'll talk about landing spots after in a later date, but I think he might be a sleeper for a little bit, and then he'll come up kind of like, he might be like a what if, like AJ Dillon, right? Where he doesn't do anything for most of the year, and then those last 6 weeks of the year, like, oh shit, this guy's like a fifth round draft pick in normal things. And then rookies, it's, I don't know where AJ Dillon was taken, but
he was a second rounder actually.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, I feel like that's how this class is going to end up too.
Yeah. They're like, last year, everyone argued about Kenneth Walker and Breece Hall at the top, and it made perfect sense. Mm. And I, like everybody else, had, you know, Isaiah Spiller up there as one of the better
again, Chargers cursed. I was so excited on draft day. I'm like, wow, he got a good running back, and he didn't do shit this year.
Nope. And he, I mean, he got supplanted as RB2, you know, like he wasn't
for a long time
to Eckler.
Yeah.
And so I look at the running backs this year that were successful, and sure, you know, Walker and Breece Hall did great. And then everyone talked themselves into James Cook and Rashad White. But look at who ended up getting not only decent draft cap, but the bulk of their team's carries. You've got Tyler Allgeier, you have Damian Pierce, and you have Brian Robinson. Like, you have those dudes that are big, you know, hulking dudes that don't have a great, they have terrible RAS scores, and they get mid-round draft cap, and then they get 200 touches their rookie year.
After watching this, this is a weird thing I've learned in the process of going back and watching tape of players who were drafted, right? Where I had no inclination of understanding of where they were, how good their skill set was, and then going back and watching and be like, oh, Kenny Pickett threw to Jordan Addison. Oh, Brian Robinson was on Alabama. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, dude, Brian Robinson, God bless him for taking gunshot wounds and get back to the NFL. But the dude's a jag, in my opinion. And he, like you said, he's still putting up numbers. Look at Tyler Allgeier. I know that's a year guy for him. That dude almost had 1,000 yards this year on a dog shit team, right? That's, like you said, those second rounders are where the value's at of these big beefy boys who aren't hyper athletic, but they can just be the bowling ball.
Everybody talked themselves into Rashad White, and Rashad White's fine player. But I kept trying to trade back from the early second so I could get Allgeier, and I didn't want Damian Pierce or Brian Robinson because I'm like, God, these guys suck. These guys are fucking bad. And you know, I think also, you know, the fun part about misses this year for you in your first year of the process is going to be me how I was last year, where I'm like, oh, I see now. I get what you're doing with this. Yeah. Because, you know, you have expectations like, the running back, if Eckler were to retire tomorrow, you would expect that the next running back that they would draft would be a pass catcher.
Yeah.
This running back is supposed to do this. And now you have, you know, as time goes on, you're like, oh, okay, well, in this type of offense, they're going to want a guy that does this. If Jacksonville drafts a running back late, you're going to be like, oh, well, he might be doing what Chase usually does.
Yeah.
Does that skill set match with the opportunities that he most likely will get? So 100%. I think... Charbonnet, I also saw a lot of A.J. Dillon, man, like, because I think, you know, last year people talked about him being a top four, top three running back for Dynasty, like, you know, drafts before he went back to school. And when he went back to school, that senior season, man, I know you watched a ton of his stuff from his years. He got a lot better at catching the ball.
He did 100%. You see the immediate, like, he's not a stellar pass catcher, but he can be reliable, right? You can give him the check down and you don't have to worry about him. And then I think that's an asset to have in a team.
There was, okay, so last year, my Tyler Allgeier love, as you know, was really kickstarted by a play where, was it Jaren Hall, the BYU quarterback, threw an interception and Allgeier chased him down and stripped the ball out from with like this nasty tomahawk.
To me,
I saw that and I'm like, dog, I need him. I want him everywhere. Yeah. And watching Zach Charbonnet break four tackles on a 4th-and-2 against, I want to say Utah.
It seems right, yeah.
In the fourth quarter to seal off a win where he was hit behind the line, spun off, broke two more, and then extended the ball over to win the game for UCLA.
Yeah.
I was like, dog.
That's a guy you want because he wants to play as hard as he can. Because there are some players I have watched in prospects where I'm like, they give up on the play. Like that, you know, that's a curable thing that you need a Mike Tomlin to reel him in. But you have those players who are theoretically playing for really nothing at that point besides their own stake. So it's like, I'm just going to give it everything I got. And that's what I like. It's like when Zach Evans trucked that dude on the sideline, like, oh shit, this dude's for real.
I'm getting mine. And you saw what I sent of Zach Evans squatting 605 pounds. And so if you're targeting Zach Evans right now in Dynasty rookie drafts, I think by the time all said and done, he's going where Chris Olave went last year, Jameson Williams.
I know you're a big Zach Evans is a combine darling because he is hyper athletic. He's I think the biggest knock on him right now is like he got supplanted by a true freshman, but right. he still put up like what 1,000 yards, right? I know his catch numbers were a little lower, but you just watch the tape. Like this is how I did prospects too, is I didn't look at stats. I didn't look at target share. I didn't look at routes run. I didn't look at how many touchdowns they scored, how many yards had. I just watched physical tape and was like, okay, what do I see? Right. And then I looked back, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then like, I would go and compare what like four or five other scouting people said about these people. And then I'd compare like, okay, what I saw, what I didn't see. But yeah, he is going to be, I know you're a big proponent of whoever lands in Miami is going to fly up the draft board. Yep. But yeah, I think as long as Zach Evans stays above the third round, I think he's going to land in that same spot because he is just so flashy.
He is. I actually think Miami is a great fit for Zach Evans specifically. You see a lot of, outside zone type runs that they usually give to what the Mortal Souls once referred to as Raheem Mostert.
And, he was good.
I see Zach Evans when he hits the corner, he's got that second gear, right?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like the zone stretch is Zach Evans' strong suit, and the zone stretch is a big part of what they run up there or down there, as far down there as an NFL team is. So I watched like his Ole Miss stuff when he was playing for Ole Miss, no one was in front of him.
Yeah.
Like he was getting enormous holes to run through. And so TCU, like watching some of his TCU games, you're like, okay, like I see now why people value him so high, because he was still super effective, while he wasn't getting the same quality of blocking.
Wasn't that the same knock on Ken Walker last year? Because he switched teams and his production was like kind of mid at the first team that he was on. And then they switched schemes and he just like blew it up.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it shows you like that if a person can perform in two different systems, then they are generally just good at football. And I'm going with the Jeff Crisco method this year of good at football. And I'm going to draft the guys who are good at football. I don't need the dude who needs to run a 4.3. I know I talked about Jalen Hyatt, but if like JSN, good at football, the dude's going to be great in the NFL.
Right. So my player comparison for Zach Evans was Cam Akers.
I put Melvin Gordon III before he ate the Danger Witch in Denver.
and you know what? Like, I feel like Melvin Gordon gets shit on a lot. And
he was so good for so long, right?
He was like so good for so long.
Like he's not a first round draft capital pick, but like after he left the Chargers, I mean, again, that was before my time, before he sat out, before Eckler ascended from UDFA to RB1.
Right.
But yeah, he's always been consistent, right? And I think that's what you want. Like, especially in rookie drafts, people have this weird disconnect of my second rounder needs to become worth two firsts in 2 years. No, they don't. They need to just produce at the value at where they're at. If you draft a second rounder and they're putting up RB2 numbers, you are flying amazing, right? Yeah. It's great to hit the lottery, right? It's great to hit the Jonathan Taylor. It's great to hit the Justin Jefferson. But if you're just drafting and breaking even, I'm not too upset about that, right? Because you always will have more picks. You will always have the waiver wire. You will always have someone who will give you an add-on in a trade who will be worth something. Like I got Devin Duvernay in some throw-in last year. And you know what? I flipped him for late second in like halfway through the year. So whatever, right?
Yeah. You should never be married to the idea of either holding on to or committing to trade someone. It just shouldn't work like that.
No, that's a bad process. No one is untradeable. Everybody has a price.
Right. So I spent a lot of time being told, as I'm sure you were, that this is or was going to be the greatest draft class in the history of fantasy football.
I'm so glad you brought this up. I'm so glad you did.
And you know, it I don't watch a lot of college ball. So
me neither. It's too hard to follow.
Right. So I was very like, okay, sounds good. See you in 2 years. Now that it's here, everyone's kind of downplaying it.
I think it's just hype, right? I think it's just the the consumerism brain we all have. I want the new shiny thing. I want what is coming. I see this dude destroy basically children. I mean, you watch Bijan tape. It looks like a dude in college just rolling over JV people. It's not fair to watch that human being play against quote unquote amateur athletes. Like the dude, it's not a fair comparison. But again, I've only been in this process for 2 years. This is my second rookie draft. So I don't have a good gauge of timeline, everything, but I remember 22 class was getting shit on all the time, but guess what? That class has been pretty decent. Sure. Quarterbacks were shit, but like we have top end wide receivers. We have top end running backs. Like
we got like six tight ends.
Yeah, I know. I was listening to the pod the other day of how Ryan was talking about that, of like the guys haven't come on, but like for tight end, you have to expect dudes to come in like year three or four. You can't have this. We've also been spoiled, right? We've been spoiled with the Jamar Chases, the Justin Jeffersons, the Herberts, the Burrows. I mean, Burrow was a little different because he got hurt, but I love Dynasty. I love Superflex Dynasty because it's such a nuanced thing. I do need to get more tight end premium leagues so I can appreciate different positions better. Sure. But it's a bake. You have to let the system grow. It's not redraft where it's like the dude didn't hit this year, whatever, he's a bust, where it's like, right, no, you need to be able to sit on a dude for 2 years to see what they do with the system given circumstances and see what you got, right? I mean, if you can flip a dude for really easy, like I know a lot of people are talking about Rashid White, flipping him because they don't see the future in Tampa, whatever, what have you. But yeah, I think it's a very interesting thing to look at, right? And maybe next year is better, maybe next year isn't. It all depends what you want to do, right? Like I know you were a big Rondale Moore guy, but I traded out of the 111 last year plus Rondale Moore for 23 first because I was like, I kind of have enough wide receivers. I don't really like this pick spot, whatever. I think it was whoever Dallas drafted as the wide receiver or Christian Watson at that pick. And I was like, Christian Watson, he's definitely like the Quentin Johnston of this year, of like athletic freak, but we don't know what he can be. And sometimes those dudes are Christian Watson. Sometimes they're N'Keal Harry, right? Where you never know of what you have. And I traded out and I ended up getting 108. And on 108, I'm like, meh, I'm going to get Quentin Johnston. Like, sure. I'm just rolling it downhill.
Right.
So,
So would you trade if you had a mid 2023 first, 105, 106? Would you trade that for a 2024 102 plus a copy of Hogwarts Legacy for Steam and a late 2024 second?
Is it deluxe edition or regular?
It's the anti-Semitic edition.
Okay. I think
not the transphobic one. That's the one that you can get in retail.
Okay, well, I think as an ally to you and a friend of you, I think I have to keep my 105. But that's a tricky thing because
I'm pretty sure you could flip that Hogwarts Legacy and that, you know, next year's 102 for like the 101 in 2025 and a Chappelle to be named later. You know,
I think that's also the problem too, is people have this weird inclination of they know what a 101 is going to be next year. You never know who's going to pop on a team. I had an awful team last year, and granted, I didn't finish strong, but I also sold off assets where like I had Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence as my quarterback 1 and 2. And people are like, your team sucks, dog. And I'm like, guess what? They ascended to top 10 guys. So now who's looking sitting pretty.
Right.
But that's what I do in dynasties. I look at teams who have depth issues. So I looked at a guy who had Matt Ryan and Matt Stafford as his quarterbacks for the year. This is like before the season even started with no other quarterbacks drafted, whatever. And I was like, there's a depth issue here. And I know this guy is pushing to go all in. Let me get his first for a team I'm trying to blow up.
Sure.
So I think landing spot, you have to be very sharp in regards to next year's and gamble things. But for me this year, 104, 105 is either going to be a quarterback, Gibbs, or JSN. Unless JSN like somehow magically falls to the second for whatever tragic thing happens, right?
Runs a 4.740 or something.
Yeah, or it's going to be Addison, right? It's one of those two guys. But I think those assets, I haven't looked at next year. I only know like three prospects. I know Caleb Williams. I know Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know any running backs. besides the dude who went back to Michigan, who's who's not going to probably get drafted next year.
RB1.
Yeah, outside of that, like, I think you kind of just have to bet on these guys and trust the process of who did I watch. Because for me, not to give spoilers too much, but I have Addison and JSN ranked the same.
Okay.
I have them at the same number. And what's going to come down to me is what team they're going to be on and how close they are in draft capital. Because the wide receiver free agency this year is atrocious. So I think we're going to see, I know we're going to get into it later, of like how quote unquote small these guys are. But when the entire class is quote unquote small guys, that's just the way the things are going to be going forward for a temporary time period, right? So I think if they're within 5 picks of each other, I still think I take JSN. But if there's like a big gap of like one goes 15 and one goes like 30, I think I lean Addison just based on how much a team trusts that player, right? Or they trade up to get him, whatever. So it's all circumstantial, right?
Like, you know, you look at like the numbers, like their actual size, you know, height, weight. 6'1", 200 pounds is not, that's not a small person.
No, or
you know what I mean?
Or he's 5'11", 190. Is that really a significant difference in stature, right? Like, this is just armchair fucking obese people being like, he's not athletic.
Well, like, that's not, like, yeah. And we all know, because we all have it fresh in our minds, that players that don't have optimal size, like Jalen Waddle and Devonta Smith, cannot be good receivers at the next level. I mean, we've seen it.
Yeah, they're pretty shit. You shouldn't have drafted those guys.
You need as many Denzel Mims as possible that are 6'4", 220 and have like 4% body fat. Like, there's no, okay, it makes sense to me why Gibbs would be downgraded because of his size, because you cannot play half of what that position asks you to do at that size.
No, that makes sense, because that is the most, outside of like O-line, is the most abused position, because you're just getting put in the meat grinder every play.
Right. And we watch undersized guys dominate in football all the time. Like, it's literally everywhere. I mean, yeah. Hunter Renfrow was a top 15 wide receiver in 2021.
Yeah, and he's just like the average dude you see at Subway, right?
Like, he's just behind the counter.
Yeah, what kind of looking turkey do you want?
And like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's a weird, I think it speaks to our like cultures. Like, does he look the part? And
it's the wrestling mind. Does he have the look?
Right. And the thing is that, and I think even pro wrestling promoters now are like, well, the look is different for different people. And if we try to identify what that is, then we can find people that fit that or create their own.
And I think the problem with that too is it's such like I don't want to say it's nostalgia, because it's not nostalgia, but I think everybody has this lens of what football should be.
Yeah.
It should just be these big meaty dudes just smashing into each other, right?
Yep.
Like, if you do have the advantage on some things, like, I think someone like a DK Metcalf is the exception. Like, the dude is a freak of nature, right? Like, not everybody can be that and be good at the position.
Right.
There's things you have to give up, where I think people just have this understanding that football, you have to be the biggest and baddest, where it's like, no, you can still be elusive and use your size to your advantage, as long as you know how to use your frame to the best of your abilities. Like, look at Devonta Smith. That dude's a wizard on the field.
Yep. Look at CD Lamb is not a giant man.
Because he's what, 6'1"? Like, I think he was billed at like 190 when he came in.
Around there, yeah.
Yeah, which is basically the size of every single wide receiver coming in this year. Like, everybody's 5'10", 190.
And like, you know, when I hear or see enough of that certain compliment, like, I've seen myself commending all of the running backs that I've covered so far with their good vision. And so I'm like, well, I can just throw this out unless I see someone that doesn't have it. And then I could say bad vision, because there should be a certain level of competency that an athlete has at their, that specific thing they're asked to do.
Correct.
But at the same time, also being able to recognize that there are other ways to be successful. You can't deny that Jalen Hurts and Joe Burrow are both good NFL quarterbacks, but they beat you in different ways.
Yep.
And I use that.
it's definitely based on system too. It's understanding right. how your player works and using those things, like going from a Matt Nagy to an Eberflus. It's understanding what your quarterback is good or your skill position player is good at and exploiting them for that. Look at Amon-Ra St. Brown, fourth round draft pick, faded into oblivion, dude, top 10 wide receiver 2 years in a row.
And I think also one of the big things that I've taken away that I always try to include when I'm thinking about a player, how does this player win? How are they successful? What determines, what's the thing that pushes them up against an opponent and somehow gives them the advantage or disadvantage? So Charbonnet can beat you two separate ways. He can beat you with that little cutback that he has, but he can beat you with power as well.
Yeah.
And I want guys that can win with as many different ways as possible because I want to know how is their NFL coach going to try to get them to win.
And I think that's how why Zay Flowers is a my guy for me as well. I know people are down on kind of his size, but I put this in my write-up. If he had a better quarterback, I think he'd be in the conversation for one of the top three wide receivers. Like, honestly, like going back to like how we were talking about how talent elevates talent, is he is amazing to watch on the field. He can play every position or every role on the wide receiver place, but he's just, you watch the quarterback play and I'm like, dude, you missed him by like 4 yards.
Right.
He had to push himself to, he had to put himself off balance to make the catch. And then he was in a bad circumstance to make the run after catch.
Sure. So let's end the show with this. You've watched a bunch of receivers. I've watched a bunch of running backs. So I want you, since I've watched zero receivers, I want you to give me a guy to watch first. And then I want to tell you a running back that I want you to watch next.
Okay, so does this have to be like a top guy or just whoever I think you should watch?
Your call.
All right, I want you to watch Josh Downs.
Okay.
And my reasoning behind that is I am at a crossroads with Josh Downs.
Okay.
And we'll elaborate that on a later date, but I would like more opinions on Josh Downs.
Okay. I'll do Josh Downs.
But for fun, though, I think you should watch Marvin Mims.
That's a Shane guy, huh?
He's a my guy. We also have the same birthday, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
Take that man in the third round.
Okay, Josh Downs, Marvin Mims. All right, so I got a running back for you that I had a really good time watching this guy. It was something I did not expect because I'm a Sean Tucker guy right now.
Yeah.
But you said he's already planned. Yeah, he's on your list. I want you to also, when you get a chance, to watch Izzy Abanaconda.
Okay.
From Pitt.
Okay.
I had a great time watching Izzy Abanaconda. I had no clue what to expect. And I thought, you know, Jag, total Jag, like smaller school, not tougher competition. And then I watched him and I'm like, this dude might be this year's Damian Pierce.
That 21 team was really good when you look at it on paper, like, yep. Like with a lens of where we are now, like Kenny Pickett, he's fine, whatever. Starting NFL quarterback. He got better mm-hmm. the year went along. Jordan Addison played. Did Izzy play there in 21 too? Or did he play yes. most? Okay. Yeah. So but
he didn't blow up until after Pickett left.
Well, I mean, sometimes you got to fill the gap of your MVP.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
He does the thing that Rashad White did his last year in college where like, He just scores. He just scores touchdowns. Yeah. So we'll do that. We will we'll meet again. We'll convene again soon to talk, and hopefully we'll talk some tight ends too, because there's some boys in this class, it sounds like.
All right, Ryan, get better so you can school us on the tight ends of the class. Because I heard this class is pretty good.
Yeah, multiple first or second round tight ends. So we will see you soon, Shane. That was always a pleasure. Come back soon.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it for having me. Take care.
All right. Craig, get the fuck out of here. Go, let's go Eagles. Let's go AJ Brown. Take home a ring. It's going to be a Dallas Goedert game if Philly wins.
So he's a W.
Here we go, baby. All right. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon.
Peace. Peace. Harry.